The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Ty Cato for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuned in to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, Dee, tearing down the sky off of their album Reach right here only on Radio Memphis. And for those of you that have been following them, you guys know that they've got some really crazy cool things. They're going to probably be hitting tours back across the pond in the UK here coming in the fall going into the winter. But one very special show that's going to be happening. Their show, at American Beauty in New York City on November the 4th, it has become actually a little more special. According to them, aside from their friends and family being able to come down, it's now become an official L'Amour reunion. And that's right, the folks that put together and were part of the greatest rock club that was ever will be coming down to cheer on their favorite house band. So you guys, there's going to be a really cool eclectic mix of people there. So you want to check that out. Now, if you want to know more, make sure that you go to Ty Cato, the official on Facebook. Of course, you know Ty Cato, Ty Cato official, .com, and you can catch up with those guys and see where they're going and see what they've got going on. You can also pick up the latest album, Reach. And if you happen to do it because you heard it right here, you make sure that you tell them that Dee said hey. All right. Now, as I was telling you earlier, we've got a lot of fun, a lot of special stuff that's going to be happening during Radio Memphis Around the World today. Today, Saturday, September the 9th. Now, don't forget, around 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. Central Daylight Time, we're going to be getting a phone call from our Artist of the Month, Mr. Tim Holzman. That is going to be all the way in from Australia. Don't miss that. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. Speaking of phone calls, you guys know also that I've been giving you a little hints and I've been dropping some stuff on media and stuff. We have another Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series alert. That's right. And every time you see that logo and every time you see that stuff that's all around, social media, and you hear us talk about it, what you do know is that we are sitting down and we're talking to an industry pro from behind the scenes, okay? And that may have been somebody that has been actually part of a live show that you've been able to see and they were able to put that together for you. It may have been somebody that has been part of, behind the scenes and part of a record of an artist, that you've purchased. And it might even be just a fantastic event that you've attended. It could be all of the above, which in this next case happens to be just that. So today we're getting a phone call in all the way from Michigan. Okay. Now currently, David Dancer McCullough, he serves as a sound engineer for Grand Rapids Symphony. Okay. And he's been doing that for the past 20 years. He's also been known as the audio engineer for the Premier Convention Center, Devo's Place, and Devo's Performance Hall in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, he's also served as the former president and continues to offer assistance for sound engineering to the IATSE Local 26, all right? And that's actually a really cool deal because that's the West Michigan Stagehands. And they serve the entertainment industry by doing things, offering production, offering lighting, audio, video, scenery, rigging, hair, makeup, wardrobe, all of that. And, for somebody who has to really understand how all of that works, you probably need to understand and we'll finally call him Dancer's background. Now, for him, okay, what you may not know is that he has over 40 years in the music business, okay? And he is most definitely a veteran of rock and roll and behind the scenes. Now, he's worked with artists such as Bob Seger. He's worked with Ted Nugent. He's worked with Aerosmith. He's worked with Pat Benatar, Ace Frehley, Vinnie Vincent. Billy Thorpe, Billy Idol, Triumph, Foghat, Patti LaBelle. How cool is that? Gladys Knight, The Rockets, Bad English, John Waite. But there's going to be one band I'm going to say next, and you guys already know the connection. Alice Cooper. That's right. So, what we're going to do is that, we're going to start talking with him and getting into his mind and getting into his stories, because this is someone who had pretty much was around and was there to help shape some of the concepts of how to put together a great record. He was around to how to set up a great stage and definitely around in the beginning to be able to tell somebody how to put on a great show. So with no further ado, guys, I want to bring Mr. David Dancer McCullough in on live with me. How are you doing, darling?
Good. How are you, Miss D?
I am wonderful. I am fantastic. I'm so excited that you and I get to sit down and do this, because you come with high esteem, my friend. Oh, everybody has been so excited that that we've been able to get you and to be able to sit down with you and talk about you and your world, and you're going to set us straight and you're going to tell it like it is.
I normally do. I mean, there's no other way, is there?
There's not. What are and so for those of you that are tuned in, and of course, I'm just going to refer to you as Dancer because that's how everybody knows you. And I want everybody to understand, you know, I'm talking to Dancer. You guys are in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series, interview right here brought to you by Kenbar Films. What are you doing right this second? Because I want everybody to understand that you're still doing stuff. What are you doing right now?
Right now I'm at the theater setting up for a comedian, Brian Reagan. He's playing here tonight at 7:30. I came in an hour early, got the microphones and the wedges and the sound set up, and I'm ready to roll. Just so I could talk to you guys.
See, how cool is that? See, I feel so special about that. And I think all my boys need to take a page from your book. You know, you've done everything. You make sure you're early. You get everything taken care of so you can spend some time with me. You send me flowers in my text. I mean, this was such a hint. I'm so throwing everybody under the bus. Dancer sent me flowers. So he's like,
I already know what everybody else said, so I know what to say and do now. I mean, they already shot their wad.
See, you are a smart, very, very smart man. Well, I tell you, one of the things, you know, one of the beautiful things about what we're doing, other than having fun and, you know, and getting into it, you know, I want to learn, you know, Dancer, I want to learn about you because, dude, you've worked with like some really cool people, but I want to learn, and I want everybody else to know what they may not know is how you got your start. And I mean, how did you even get into this crazy world that you're in now? I mean, very beginning.
When the Beatles came out, one of my best friends was a girl named Linda Matthews and her brother and my brother Steve. And we used to take and get brooms and shit like that and stand around and pantomime and pretend we were the Beatles.
Yeah.
I never played an instrument. I was never a musician. I was always the guy that was always fiddling with the radio and turning it up and turning it down and adjusting the EQ and stuff, even at an early age with cheap stereos.
Right.
And one of my best friends was a girl. I had run away from home a couple of times at the age of 15. Between age 15 and 16, I had run away about three times.
Wow.
And this last time I ran away, she was living with the lead singer of a band called The T.
Okay.
In Rochester, Michigan, and they were living in a band house. And I came up there and crashed on the couch and started working for them.
Wow.
I had never done anything like that before.
Okay.
And when they weren't working, I also moved into the band house that Bob Seger had.
Oh, wow.
Out in Rochester as well, and ended up working for Bob Seger. And ultimately, I became his sound engineer, tour manager, and actually drove the Winnebago. And Punch Andrews, Seeger's manager, likes to laugh and remind me that I only made $125 a week back then, and we lived off of a golf credit card and stayed in Holiday Inns. So I roomed with the two background singers, one of them which was my girlfriend, and the other one who's Sean Murphy. She's a blues singer.
Okay.
And she sings with Bob Seger right now. And the other lady was Marcella Detroit. Her name's Marcy Levy, and she's from Detroit as well. She sang. Wow. She was my girlfriend. She ended up singing with Leon Russell and Eric Clapton. She
yes.
wrote Lay Down Sally and
yes.
sang all those tunes. So those were the formative years, the late 60s, early 70s. So I'm approaching 50 years in the business next year.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, you know, it's so funny, Dancer, is that, you know, you were there when everybody was really starting and getting their thing. And you were in the middle of all that. You, by the way, you've dated some pretty cool people. Man, I didn't realize you came with that kind of caliber. I'm like, dude.
Well, you know.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, apparently you were quite the you know, wink wink, you know, and everybody loved and stuff.
I was like a little panty rooster back then. Now I'm just like a big Buddha.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Buddha.
You know.
There's nothing wrong with Buddha.
People call me and say, what kind of dancer? How's Donner and Blitzen and all that? You know, I've heard that. You know, I've had that nickname for, let's see, I was almost 50 years. So nobody calls me David. My mother doesn't even call me David. She calls me Dancer.
So just so everybody is clear, and the majority, I mean, people who are close to you and people who worked with you probably already know this, Dancer, all right? And it's spelled a very specific way, all right?
Right.
All right, D-A-N-S-I-R, Dancer.
Right.
Okay, why?
The name came from a guy that ran away with my first wife. He took off with my wife and kids.
Oh, wow.
And I was caught saying something. I had an attitude of a 6'6", 300-pound man, and I was 5'8", and weighed 130 pounds. So,
nice.
And I was overheard one time saying, "Yeah, well, I'm gonna dance on him," and blah blah blah. And then come to find out about a month later, living in that house in Rochester, a guy came to the house, and we were rehearsing the band T, the band called T, and then they were later called 1776. We were rehearsing for a show in Windsor, Ontario, a show called Robin Seymour's Swingin' Time, mm-hmm. and it was over in Canada. So we were rehearsing, and I was told to keep everybody out of the rehearsal so we could get some stuff done and whatnot. And this guy came to the door and started walking down the stairs, and I said, no, you're not supposed to go down there. He didn't know me. I didn't know him.
Right.
But he was a fairly decent-sized guy, and I said, no, you're not going down there. I was told to keep everybody out. And he kept insisting going down there. I said, well, I'll tell you what. You take one more step and I'm going to dance on your head. And he thought that was funny. Everybody else thought that was funny. That it came out of a little guy like me. So they started calling me The Dancer. And it was still spelled D-A-N-C-E-R.
Ah.
1976 with Ted Nugent, first European tour, we were walking around London, and there was this T-shirt making place, and I said, "Wow, you know, I'm going to make this my own." So I did away with C-E-R and did S-I-R.
Of course,
and I made a shirt. Had a shirt made that said "Dancer's the Answer," and it was spelled the same way, both words. So, and you know, I wore it proud. People say, "Well, how'd you get that name?" Or you know, they do the Donner and Blitzen, or are you a belly dancer, hold me closer, tiny dancer. I mean, you can't believe how many things that I've heard. And I said, well, how many other guys do you know named Dave? And he said, well, a lot. I said, how many do you know named Dancer? And he said, just one. I said, that's a good thing.
That's the perfect thing, and that's a perfect answer. Well, okay, that makes sense. I like it. You know, and Dancer has stuck. You know, Dancer, going back to, you know, you getting started and both basically starting in in band houses on the sofa, what everybody has to understand is that you had no clue what to do. You had no idea what you were doing, right?
Absolutely not. I had no clue what was going on, how to do it, but I knew from the days of the Beatles and music, and I was into the Rolling Stones, and I was heavily into music.
Sure.
That was my spot. And my mother had always told me, she said, you know, no matter what you do, try to do the best you can, whether you're a ditch digger or a truck driver or a doctor or whatever.
Yep.
And I applied that, and I learned in clubs and whatnot, running a spotlight with one hand, doing primitive, we had very primitive sound back then. The speakers that we had used for sound systems would be speakers that people would use for monitors now.
Wow.
We've come full circle. I'm an old analog, dyed-in-the-wool analog guy, but now I can run digital and analog, and I've stuck it out. You know, I'll be 66 years old in November, so I made it my mission to do it the best I can, and it worked out. I couldn't have had it any better with the bands and the people that I've worked for in my career.
You've worked with some pretty insane people, and you know, and it's funny because looking at your, you know, the discography and looking at your credits and everything else. So, and as everybody, you know, who's tuned in, we're talking to Dancer McCullough. Look, you wind up doing, you know, getting in with these guys, and you're doing whatever it takes in order to make the world go round. You've done, you know, you've done tour managing, you're doing stuff with sound, you're doing stuff with stage managing, you get really pretty much thrown off into the deep deep end of the pool with no floaties. Right. And you're like, okay, swim. And so you start doing this. Now, you wind up really kind of finding your niche with the sound. You know what I mean?
I was lucky.
Okay. All right. So what do you mean you were lucky?
I was lucky that I found something that I could actually achieve something with. You know, I've traveled the world. I've done some of the biggest shows in the history of music. I've been very fortunate in working with all the people that I've worked with in my career, all the guys, all the bands, all the crews. We're a tight community, and we still, after all these years, I still talk to people from that first band. Wow. I'm one of the oldest surviving alumni of the Bob Seger system. Ted Nugent. I mean, every camp that I was in, I was part of it. And each band that I worked for, there was a separate family. But they're all out there together. And I'll tell you what has been the really cool thing about my whole career is now I can talk to those people on a regular basis on Facebook. It's bizarre that, you know, we've come this far. And now, instead of hearing about a guy 3 months after the fact, or somebody having a baby, or he might have passed away, or whatever, you're informed right now.
And right now, and you can catch up with
cool.
It is cool. And I tell you what was funny is that, you know, because you have figured out, and of course you and I, we spent some time on the phone and we've chatted about what we're doing with the Road Crew Radio series, and the fact that we're trying to get all these stories and every, you know, all the stuff, because you guys are definitely the magic that nobody ever understands or gets to see. And you've been, you especially have been part of so much craziness and so much coolness. You first, and with you guys always come up in each other's interviews in some shape or form, you know, depending upon what the impact may be. And oddly enough, and it was in between breaks, and it was after I had gotten off the interview with Mr. Robert Scoville, okay? And he was like, oh my God, dancer, you know what I mean? And he was like, God, he was so important to me, and I needed to mention him. And I wanted to bring that up because I know that was very important to Robert, number one. Number two, he and I had so much fun. This is the part where, and for those of you that have been kind of following and hanging out with us, and it was not done intentional, and it was not done on purpose, but it turns out that Alice Cooper camp, you know, winds up being, you know, kind of like a great, you know, breeding meeting ground when I get to talk to all of you guys.
Alice Cooper's had some of the best technicians and engineers that money could buy, and they're all highly, highly recommended people.
Yes.
And if you've worked for Alice Cooper, you're in a brotherhood and sisterhood that is unmatched. Shep Gordon and Coop and everybody there, his daughter, his wife. I mean, it's probably one of the most close-knit groups of people that you'll ever, that was some of the best times I ever had. And I've known him since the Detroit days when I worked for a band called the John Drake Shakedown. John Drake was the lead singer that sang Journey to the Center of the Mind.
Oh,
and
wow.
We also lived in a band house on Joy Road between 7 and 8 Mile Road in Livonia. And that, there were two houses. There was the front house that was the party house, and there was the house in the back where we all slept and did other funny things.
And what things?
Well, it was a bunkhouse for all the wayward women.
Wayward women.
Well, when you live in a band house, they all want to be friends with you and come to the band house and party. So
just women.
The money. I was skinny for a reason back then. It's because I was starving my ass off, but I had plenty of all the other things that go with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Money wasn't part of that equation, but I didn't do it for the money. I did it because it was something that was groundbreaking for me, and it just became my way of life. And now, you know, this many years later, here I am sitting in a control room of the theater in front of my soundboard,
right,
watching everybody else set up because I came in an hour early.
Look at you. That's the way it should be. So Dancer, are you telling me that you were the epitome, you were the poster child of what sex, drugs, and rock and roll is?
You're goddamn right. Why not? I mean, there were times where I shouldn't even be on this planet anymore, but I survived those hard times and foolish times and self-inflicted times. And some of the stories that we've done, you know, are history making. Some of the bands, some of the everything that we did, we set the example for the next crew. We didn't, broadcast or advertise all the extracurricular. You had to find that stuff out by yourself.
I see. So this was, you figure it out on your own, and if you make it through the woods, you know.
Right.
I got you. I mean, that's almost like a form of, you know, somewhat like a cross between hazing and, you know, prepping and everything else.
Oh, hazing is when you get a rookie on the bus and he gets on the bus and you ostracize him and you know, I had two guys on Monsters of Rock that was Van Halen, Scorpions, Metallica, Kingdom Clone, and Doc, and we had two guys. We were hiring guys literally off the local crews because we had so much sound and the crews weren't staffed before the tour went out, and we had 52 trucks on that tour. So we were actually grabbing guys off the local crews, and we grabbed two guys off the local crew. From what I understand, none of them are in the business anymore except for one guy, and he's called the Skull, and he actually works in Indianapolis as a sound guy now. But two guys came on the bus, and I was sitting there in the front lounge with the one guy and another guy, and I was considered old and grumpy back then, and that was, what, 25
you know,
years
I was
ago,
not, I was I not going to bring that
ago.
Up. I was not going to bring
that
up.
I was considered old and grumpy back then, and this kid comes out of the bus, and a waft of crap permeates the air, and I go, "Did you just shit on the bus?" And he goes, "Yeah, wasn't I supposed to?" And then the guy sitting next to him goes, "I did too." I went apeshit, and they got thrown off the bus for the day, and I wouldn't allow them back on the bus until they cleaned the bathroom and
That's like a total
those
Carter
are the things
role.
That you learn the hard way.
that's part of, yeah, of course, that was part of the We Are the Road Crew book, you know, from Ken Barr. Like, and then it's like there's rules, and one of them is like, do not do number two on the bus.
No,
period.
No. Okay. That's wrong.
Okay, well, okay. See, here's the thing, Dancer. Apparently you and I are going to go completely out of order with this, and I'm totally good with that because I've got you for at least another hour. Look.
Okay.
So, since we're going out of order, and since you brought up the bus thing, one of the things that I was told to ask you about. Look, you did this, man. This is your fault. I was going to be totally pro. We're going to talk about your career, and we're going to talk about the fact that you are doing, you know, you do sound and that you engineer some of the most fantastic records on the planet. And we'll still talk about that because you're an amazing man. But you went out of order, and so I'm supposed to ask you about Germany and the beer.
Okay. Well, you guys asked for it. Now you're going to get it. I hope my mom doesn't listen to this. Well, it wouldn't shock her.
And just so you know, Batty started it. I think.
Of course he did, because he's the one that can drink beer until it blows. Yeah, I mean, he's got a hollow leg.
But I also got confirmation from Dan, just so you know.
Oh, of course. I mean, it was probably, well, here we go. We were in, I think it was Hamburg, Germany.
All right.
With Alice Cooper.
Okay.
We went, made the mistake. Back then, I still drank. I don't drink anymore, so, and that's probably a good thing. We go to this outside beer garden. I order a beer. This goddamn thing it's like this, I don't know, huge. It's not a pint. English people and Europeans drink pints, but these Germans drink liters. So
okay.
I don't know how many liters this thing was, but it was a big mug of beer. And I ate spaghetti for lunch.
Why,
well, I had
why
like
would you
three
do
of
that?
These beers. I was so shit-faced. I staggered back to the gig, got in a dressing room that wasn't being used. Now, this is thoroughly disgusting, but it's probably funny as hell.
That's okay.
have you heard the story?
I'm heard it. Look, I want you to tell me the story. because I want you to tell a story.
Okay.
Just so you know, John Cecilli is blowing my phone up going, oh shit, he's gonna tell it. Oh my god. Yeah. And I got a message from Robert Scoville going, please give him my best while you're telling this story. And I've also got a mess. Okay, here comes Batty. So yeah, you're on the platform now.
Okay. Well, so we drank beer. I'm a lightweight when it comes to drinking German beer. And Batty's a tea bag, Irish boy, English heritage. And he can drink shitloads of beer. Well, not me. So I go into this dressing room. It's all dark in there. And it's fairly late in the afternoon because we stayed there for a while. And I, you know, did drink more than I should have. And everybody drank their normal and just were fine. It was dark, and I woke up with this urge to puke.
Of course you did.
But I also woke up with this urge to shit at the same time.
Oh, of course you did.
So I woke up, I put my hand over my mouth, I painted that whole damn dressing room the best I could. And as it was coming out of my mouth, it was coming out of my ass just as fast.
Oh,
it was like my body was giving up on me and dying.
My God, dancer!
Yeah.
So
here I am.
Okay.
I paint this dressing room. I stagger outside. The punters are coming up to the gig to come in. I stagger to the bus. I clean myself up the best I can. I go back in. I do the gig. My head is on the console. I'm hanging on for dear life. We get in, duty loadout. I finally sober up and I feel terrible. I get on the bus and we travel to the next town. Well, you know, when things like that run down your leg, they tend to run into your boots too. So I took and washed my boots and put them outside next to the bus that next morning. And it was said that a dog came along, looked at the boots and sniffed them and just took off. But I mean, yeah. So whenever I see those guys or anybody from that era, or if you see something that where I chime in about something and I say, somebody says I pooped and I say, yeah, I pooped and I puked. But no, that was nasty.
So, I mean, did you like get in trouble?
Hell no. I'm the fifth Beatle. Why would they get rid of me?
They're not going to get rid of you. They're not going to get rid of you at all.
Everybody thought it was funny. I still did my job. You know, Dan Stevenson to this day has he wasn't very impressed with it. And I'm sure it didn't get back to Poof, I don't think. I don't think he ever heard that story. But it's a famous story now. Everybody knows.
Of course it is. Well, yeah, that's one of the ones I just kind of was like, you know, look, when I knew that you and I were going to sit down and talk, dancer, and I knew that, you know, we were going to be able to talk about some of the incredible, you know, artists and stuff.
Are we supposed to be talking about educational things?
We are. But
I guess that is an education, not to...
Well, make it.
Drink a lot of German beer and eat spaghetti.
Okay, well, there. All right. You made it right. Okay. You made it right, in my way. Yeah, make this educational. Don't drink German beer and eat spaghetti and get on the bus while you're on tour.
Oh, God.
Okay, all right, we got that straight. Look, my eyes are tearing up, and everybody's blowing my phones up because they are howling over here. I'm gonna stop down. I'm gonna take a quick commercial. I'm not done because I have other questions. We are gonna make this educational at some point.
Well, that's educational, but I don't know what category it falls in.
It's rules of the road and survival, I think. It's one of those,
right.
Yeah. Break open in case of emergency. Well, look, baby, I'm going to place you on hold. Don't go anywhere.
All right.
And we're
going to
place a song, and I'm going to bring you back. Hold tight, all right?
I'm here.
All right. And for those of you that are hanging out with me, right now you're in the middle of Radio Memphis Around the World, and we have a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series Alert interview with David Dancer McCullough. And I promise you, you're not going to get this anywhere else but here. And of course, you know, that series brought to you by Ken Barr Films. Guys, look, I'm going to stop down, take a quick commercial break. I do have a song that I got to get in for you. A little Jive Braveries right after this, right here only on Radio Memphis. And then some more from Dancer. That's Jive for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, Dee. The song is called Bravery, and that is off their album, Epic Tales of Human Nature. That is also a former Artist of the Month for us right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. For those of you that are in Dallas, Jive returns to the Curtain Club. That's going to be Saturday, October the 7th, 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time. You guys rock out. Have a fantastic time. It's going to be a load of fun. If you go down there and you do it because you heard it here, please, please, please tell them that D said hey, okay? Speaking of brave and bravery, we are in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series alert, an interview brought to you by Ken Barr Films and Radio Memphis. We are in the process of talking to Mr. Dancer McCullough. Hey, honey.
Hi.
By the way,
hey, before I forget, I want to give a shout out to Robert Soville.
Yes.
He's probably one of the most influential audio engineers that have come about in the last 40 years as far as doing groundbreaking things and doing great things with audio. And I was fortunate enough to know him early on in his career. And I do believe that I shaped some of his attitude. He already had the skills, but he needed a little bit of attitude, and I gave him a little bit of incentive, and he's run with it. And I just want to say how proud I am of him. And
oh wow!
And he's a major part of the Alice Cooper tour as well. But
he's
gone on and done a lot of great things, and Avid consoles, and all kinds of things. He does things that I could never even think of doing, like when somebody wants to know what I think of a piece of equipment and everything, I always get this jaded response, you know, that, oh yeah, it sounds like every other one, and you know, but he's made it a business, and he's brought things pretty far as technology goes, and I gotta give a kudos for that.
He has spoken very, very extremely, you know, Dancer, highly of you and how impactful you were to him. And that's the beautiful thing about all of this in learning, you know, how everybody affected each other. And in fact, you know, you came in while he was doing the stuff with Alice Cooper. And kind of helped support what he had going on and help support, you know, his thought process of what he was doing, you know, for front
of the
house.
The thing about it was, he was an amazing sound engineer, but he didn't have control of the band. And I told him, hey, listen, you tell the drummer to come out there and play drums, and when he's done, you tell him to shut up and wait, and then you get the bass player, and then you get the guitar player, and it's like putting a puzzle together instead of letting a group of musos go out there and noodle all day. I mean, it's a waste of everybody's time. We got shit to do. We got, you know, Sim City and golf and, you know, just sit out on the bus and enjoy ourselves. And why should we sit there while the musos are up there just wasting time? So we put a regiment in it, and he applied his skill, and he's done great things.
He's done fantastic things. I will have to say that there was a couple of, and I don't know if you realize this or not, we have a chat room that people are kind of signed into. And, you know, and it's funny because it's off of livestream.com/ Radio Memphis. For those of you that are, because, you know, you can listen to us on TuneIn Radio. You can listen to us directly off the website, radio-memphis.com/listen, which takes you to this live stream. And I while we were on this break, I opened it up and I realized, oh, look, there's somebody's made some comments. There's a lady by the name of Betty Chase that says, yeah, your mom is listening.
That's my mother.
She's like, yeah, she's listening. And apparently, there's also a gentleman by the name of Tom Milton.
He's past president of the local here in Grand Rapids, and he's been instrumental in the union here. And he's the head electrician, and he started out as a projectionist back in the day, and he's been in this local, I think, close to 40 years. He's one of the people that brought me to Grand Rapids. There's two people. And he always tried me to come off the road and work up there because he lived up where I lived in the middle of the woods up in Lake County up in Irons, Michigan. And out in the middle of nowhere, I found that place when I was working for Nugent. I stayed at his place.
Okay.
and drove around one day and saw this magical place and ended up moving up there. Well, divorced and took pretty much care of that, and I'm not living there anymore. But yeah, Tommy, I've known Tommy for quite a while, and he's instrumental for me being here in Grand Rapids, one of the two people that are taught me and doing something other than touring. So 30 years on the road, 30 years here in Grand Rapids.
So. I see. Well, he's made the comment that you're the best sound engineer, he goes, I've ever worked with more than once.
Well, here's the thing. He tells this story a lot. There used to be a 4,500 seat concert venue next door here, which is now ballrooms. It was called the Welsh Auditorium. And Ted Nugent came here. We were here in 1975, 1976. and he said something. He was standing around. And I said, hey, you ever hear 132 dB?
He was just saying this story.
The faders,
yes,
to 12 and, you know, just unleashed all hell on people.
That is awesome.
I was paid to make it sound good. Ted used to say, I want to see those people in the front row. He says, I want to see their ears bleed. So I did the best I could, you know.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Crush some skulls.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, everybody's sending love. You know, of course.
Well, rock and roll is too goddamn refined and proper, and everything's so freaking, I don't know, it's just
too polished.
It's not raw anymore. It's not the real deal.
It's too polished.
Back then, it was solid, you know, just crush your face.
Absolutely, and it was absolute. What you heard is what you got. You know, there was no fixing it in post. There was no.
Nope.
Right. Okay. Well, this is the part where we get. Okay, we'll go back because I do have more questions, but that'll take us back to the dark side. So let me pull back. Hold on. Let me pull back for a second. So you know, you start out, and of course at that time you were doing it, you didn't realize, you know, how big these people were going to be or how successful they were going to be. When you're going, you know, dancer, when you're going through and you're starting to work with these cool people, I mean, all of this is just by process of association, right? Somebody knew somebody,
right,
and they're like, hey, get dancer. Somebody knew somebody to like, hey, get him to do this for you.
Well, I lived in the middle of nowhere, so I didn't live in New York, Chicago, LA. I lived in the middle of the woods, so it had, and a long distance phone call was a long distance phone call, and it cost you a lot of money. And if you hadn't been working and hadn't been touring, it cost a lot of money just to get your name out there and to talk to people. There was no social media, there was no cell phones, there was nothing.
Right.
It was you and the road. And so word of mouth is basically how I did my first 30 years in this industry. And if they saw one of the groups that I was mixing, or someone associated with a group saw me and said, oh yeah, get that guy. You know, I like that, you know, and you got to trick these musicians into getting somebody they think they might like instead of their best friend or somebody that hangs around with them. Because a lot of times musicians have the wrong faith in the wrong people, and they have to learn the hard way. You don't hire your best friend or your buddy or the guy that was your babysitter to do monitors for you.
Right.
Or do front of house. You hire a professional.
There it is.
So
you said it.
We stayed out there. We rocked it. I mean, there's a lot of guys in this industry, and there's some that have come and gone. A gentleman named Davy Kirkwood. He did all the Deep Purple and all the hard English people, but he also mixed the Beach Boys. There was a guy named Gunji Patterson that got his name for working for Richie Blackmore and mixing Judas Priest. He was 7 foot tall.
Holy
you
smokes.
Couldn't forget him. Davy Kirkwood was 5'6". You couldn't forget him. The thing that they had in common was they were both completely Scottish and crazed son of a bitches. And but
not them.
A lot of these engineers have come and gone, but there's still great ones still doing it. There's a gentleman out of New York City that I've talked to you about that's a world famous guy. I would imagine that just about anybody that knows music, hardcore music, especially from New York City, knows Night Bob. And he just happened to be Walter Becker's assistant.
Okay.
And he's a guitar guy, but he was his personal assistant. But he still mixes sound. I mean, there's guys out there that are still on the road, still making us proud, and been around for a long time. I mean, it's a small community when you get right down to it. The earth is a big place, but our little club of people, a few hundred people,
right,
are the ones that make it happen.
And that's something to really, and I think that's the, you know, Dancer, and for those of you that have tuned in, I'm talking to Dancer McCullough as part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series. That's one of the reasons why I tap into, you know, I'm tapping into you guys, okay? You make a lot of stuff happen. You like a lot of magic happen. You make a lot of things happen, you know, as far as, you know, behind the scenes, with whatever the case, you know, case may be. And you have been around long enough, you know, to see the industry evolve, re-evolve, fall apart, re-evolve again, you know?
Right.
Is there something, I know there's an answer, and I know you'll tell it to me, because it already, what I think is the answer. You know, is there something that does not change? No matter what's going on, is there something that does not change for you?
Camaraderie. Work ethic. Professionalism. Respect. It's all about respect. Because if you don't have respect with each other, I don't particularly like lighting guys or keyboard players.
Okay.
Sometimes some of the worst people on earth can be those people, but I've got some really close friends. You had Mike Godwin on. He's one of the best guys I've ever worked with. But they're still people, and you still treat them with respect.
Yes.
And even though I call them squints, you know, because they make me squint. I have to wear sunglasses to do shows because there's more lights in the audience that are on the band in some bands, so that's wow. What hence the word squint, and you know, nice. They call me a humhead. I'm proud of that.
They got everybody says you're so grumpy, Dancer. Why are you so?
I am.
Why are you so grumpy?
It's not a matter of grumpy. It's a matter of being jaded and expecting others to be on board and be thinking the same things that you are. I take people for granted sometimes, thinking that because they act like they know what they're doing, that they know what they're doing. But that doesn't always work out that way. There's people that you can never tell anything what to do, because if you suggest something and they try to tell you, I know what I'm doing. And then they go out and they screw up big time. It's like, okay, well, if it walks like a duck, if it talks like a duck, normally it's a duck. So I can spot these guys from a mile away. And it's usually rookies or people that do video.
What is that? That's wrong, Dancer.
That's why they call them video. I understand we have to have them, but, you know.
All right.
Just
so
don't sit by me.
All right, damn you. You brought me to the dark side again. So I have to ask you another question.
Okay.
I'm supposed to, and I'm trying to remember how this was, you know, it was the pseudo microphones.
Oh.
You already know who this is.
Placebo?
The placebo microphones. And you should, by me making that simple statement, you should know who that came from.
It comes from a sound guy. It has to. And I don't remember. I use that a lot. I've used placebo microphones through quite a few. And working with the symphony, when I first came to work for the Grand Rapids Symphony, you got to understand, I came from a rock and roll background.
Yes.
And the guy that they had here before me was a union guy. He wasn't really... He had the job because he was in the union. He didn't have the job because he was so qualified. Even though he was a sound engineer, he didn't have the skills to back up the position. So when I came in, these people thought they were going to treat me like they taught him. They had lost all respect for him, and he had quit his job because he was going through a marriage and whatnot. And I came in, and it was at a time where I was trying to pull off the road to watch my children grow and be there. So I came off the road on my own accord. And I came in to this symphony and started putting up microphones, and they weren't used to having somebody put up microphones. Well, I came from a rock and roll background, and I came in right away and got him set it straight. I put the fear of God in them. They didn't even know what hit them. They're like, who in the hell is this guy?
It doesn't matter. Like, doesn't even matter what
kind of music.
And
they weren't about to tell me anything. So I don't want to, and it was the typical response from a musician was, a classical musician is, oh, I don't want that microphone around me. I hate microphones. And you think to yourself, and I always come up with these retorts, and I said, well, how in the hell did you think you heard the first recordings and the things that influenced your life?
Right.
They were recorded by a microphone.
Right.
You do your job, I'll do mine. And, you know, so over the years, they've learned to trust me and learned that I can be a crazy son of a bitch that yells stuff out of the booth window. But when I mic things now, everybody wants a microphone because they've seen the proof in the pudding.
Ah.
I mix an outdoor pop series where I've got 100 microphones on the orchestra and they sound like they're here in the hall. And so they've learned to respect me and trust me and whatnot. They don't necessarily all like me because they say things to them that they don't like. But when it comes to somebody wanting another microphone or where's my microphone, I just tell one of my guys, it's a throw placebo over there and tuck the cable under the carpet. So that's a placebo.
Well, and, Mr. Dan Stevenson was the one that shared me that tidbit. And it was based on, and I guess it was based on a particular show where, you know, you were doing, you were miking up the winds, you know, and making sure that they were all set up. And it was the horn section, you know, that was requiring, you know, that they have microphones too, or they wanted to know where theirs was, like a horn section needs them. You know, and so so you're the
There's
one.
There's a lot of placebo stories with me. There's a story. When the first year I came into the symphony here in Grand Rapids, you got to understand, I'm a greaser from Detroit, proud of it. People from Detroit have their own way of doing things, and I live here. I am in Grand Rapids, where all I ever knew it was where Gerald Ford was from, and Chevy Chase did the bumbling, But I've learned in 20 years, I've learned it's a great city, and I love it here. But the first pops I did, I had a monitor in front of the trumpet player, and he started waving his hands and pointing, and I thought he was pointing at the speaker, so I turned it up a little bit, and he kept waving and everything, so I turned it up a little bit more, and he's still, you know, making all these gestures. It looked like he's trying to flag down a 747, and I'm going, what in the hell does he want? So I just gave up, and I gave him the you know, where you give somebody the high hard one. I did that, and I gave him that gesture, and come to find out, it wasn't about the microphone or the monitor. The stand lights were on a dimmer, and the lights kept going up and down. But I apologized to him for being such an asshole at first. I said, keep that one for later because we might have to revisit that, and you can just keep that up yours for later because I might have to use it later.
Dancer, only you.
Well, you told me not to sugarcoat it, and
I don't want you to.
That word's not in my vocabulary.
No, it's not. And in fact, John Cecilli, who, by the way, he's sending you big love. I'm not going to use the exact terminology because it is it is filthy. But the big love is at the end of this.
Here's a guy that can get on a tour bus, 3 o'clock in the morning. We're rolling down the road in the middle of nowhere. Everybody's sleeping. You think everybody's asleep. And you hear this. And it's him opening a beer in his bunk at 3 o'clock in the morning and having a beer.
Of course.
That's how dedicated that man was to drinking beer. And I love the guy. I mean, I called him. We had names for everybody. And his name was Skinskuski. Skinskuski. So, I mean, you know, Johnny is a phenomenon. He works for a lot of different people now. So he does.
In fact,
he's a cool guy.
In fact, right now he is doing the stint with Cher, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's
another sound friend of mine used to do him. His name is Dave Morgan, and he's world class. He's done just about everybody, and he still does James Taylor and a bunch of different people. But he was the Doobie Brothers' original sound engineer back in the day.
I got you. So, you know, Dancer, for you, and as we're bouncing back and forth between the dark side and, you know, the holy grail of why we're here. let's come back to this side of the fence for a second. So, over the course of time, you know, when did you really kind of fall in love with the sound engineering, the engineering, you know, the front of the house? When did you figure out that was your place?
Probably towards the end of working for Bob Seger, because things started getting a little bit more complicated. If you look on the back, well, they don't have albums anymore, but the album
they're coming back
that I came in on with Bob Seger, it was still called the Bob Seger System.
Okay.
It was a four-piece band. Bob Seger played lead guitar. Dan Honaker played bass. Pat Perrine played drums. And, God, he's going to kill me for this. I can't remember. Dan Watson from Kalamazoo played keyboards, and it was a rock band. It was a hard rock band, and Seger, and that's when it all did. Because for a while, when I first started, I was the drum roadie. I did everything. There was three guys in a U-Haul truck, and if you needed to stretch out, you'd put one guy in the back and lock him in the back with the equipment, sleep on the B3 organ. And the Leslie's, because they had covers on them.
I got you.
But that's where I come from. I mean, we worked together, and there was three guys in a truck or two guys in a truck. And, you know, that's when I learned that, hey, if I'm going to be doing this and I'm this way with anything, once I get my hands dirty and get into something, I don't stop until either I give up, which is not really in my vocabulary, or until I get it right.
Right.
And and all I can remember is what my mom said, you know, be the best that you can be. Well, goddamn right. And I was and still am. And I've told a lot of young guys, I said, if they don't quit screwing around with all this new shit and technology and making things so stupid, I may come back out there and come back out on the road and show them all how it's done.
Don't you feel like, Dancer, don't you feel like you want to do that one more time?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And if the right, I'm not desperate to get out on a tour to where, oh, put me out on it. No, it's got to be the right thing or nothing at all. I'm not going to go back out for the sake of going back out. I'll go back out if it's something that I want to do and something that I like. Otherwise, I'm comfortable with what I've done. I've got no regrets, and I'm proud of everything I've done, including all the stupid shit.
Sorry. Yeah, speaking of stupid shit. All right, so now you got me saying shit. Look, speaking of stupid shit. Okay, do you feel better now? Look.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, honey.
It's contagious.
I understand that. As long as I want to be the good hostess, and I want to make sure that you're comfortable. So I need to ask you about the time you stepped off the bus in the Bronco Bowl.
Bronco Bowl, shit. It was Alice Cooper, Bronco Bowl. The bus driver parked next to a frickin' hole in the ground.
Mm.
I stepped off the bus and stepped into this hole, and I broke my foot. It sounded like a shotgun went off.
Oh.
And I had a Jones stress fracture. Went to the hospital or the doctor, got a cast put on it, and finished the tour walking in a cast. I came back and never skipped a beat.
When we hit
the Fox Theater in Detroit, that son of a bitch itched so bad that I asked somebody for a saw, and I cut it off my own foot. And that was that.
Well, that was a story that was brought up. And again, like I said, you know, everybody's kind of confirmed the story with each other and stuff, but that one was the one that Dan was telling me about and said that it was that moment that you had rose like 10 notches in his book, you know, as of a tutter, you know, utter and total
respect.
Yeah,
I just wasn't some opinionated asshole that he had to deal with.
Correct.
That's where the respect comes in. I earn that respect. And other people should earn it, too. It shouldn't be given to people without it, you know, doing something for it. There's too much of that shit going on now. Just because you show up, you should be respected. That's bullshit.
No.
Do your job.
That's it. There's no award, you know, for just being here. You know, you actually have to do something.
Well, there's certain people that remember me for really good things, and then there's certain people that will never forget me. Can I tell you another story about one of those people?
Of course you can, because I'm curious now. When you preface it like that, what am I going to do, say no?
I don't remember the guy's name, but I remember that he was a worthless piece of shit. And we're out on this tour. We're out on the Bad English tour. Here's guys from the Babies, John Waite and Ricky Phillips from the Babies.
Okay.
And two guys from Journey. And it's a super group.
Okay.
And we're in a Winnebago, six guys, because they couldn't afford a bus. Dressing room cases were bigger than some dressing rooms we were in.
Wow.
We were playing these theaters and whatnot.
Okay.
So I was the production manager / front of house. Well, I ended up driving the Winnebago because I couldn't trust anybody else on the crew to do it. I woke up one night and the lighting / wardrobe guy, I don't remember his name. So if I don't remember your name, it's because you didn't mean much to me, and you know, but I remember the face and what happened.
Okay.
So we're on this tour. I let this guy drive one night, and I wake up, the Winnebago's weaving back and forth, and I looked up there, and then here's this son of a bitch asleep in the wheel. So I knock him out of there, and so I decide that I'm the only guy that can drive the whole tour. So I drove all night, did it. Shit all day. I think that's why I can only sleep 3 hours a night.
Okay.
At this point in my life.
Ah.
But we pulled into this truck stop, and this guy screwed up bad. Okay. Waite's clothes would always come back all screwed up. He did two things that were important and couldn't get either one of them right. He was the lighting guy and the wardrobe guy. So if the wardrobe was screwed up, then the musicians were pissed off. If the lights were wrong, it made us all look bad. And he was worthless. So I'm driving the Winnebago. We pull up to this truck stop in Kansas City.
Right.
And it's where he lives. He lives in this town. He didn't know this, but he was about to be let go. So I tell the guitar roadie, I said, hey, go in the back and grab his suitcase and bring it up here, would you?
Okay.
And he did. And when he did, I grabbed the suitcase, threw it out the door. And the guy goes, hey, why did you do that? And I said, you'll see. He gets off the bus or off the Winnebago to grab his bag. And I take off and I left him there. That's the last time I've ever seen him. So there's people that know me and respect me and remember me for good times and funny times. But then there's assholes like that to remember the time he got thrown off the bus and left at a truck stop to his own device to get back home.
Wow.
That's how he got fired.
Wow.
And when I tell people that, they think it's just a story. No, that's the truth.
You're killing me. By the way,
he was worthless.
A little bit later on, you know, I'm getting a phone call in from Australia, right? So I have this artist of the month that I have every month, and sometimes during the month I get to talk to them for an interview, right? So
I love Australia.
Yeah, he's tuned in. He just sent me a message, and he wanted me to tell you, Tim Holzman wanted me to tell you that this guy Dancer rocks. I love him. So yeah, I just yes. Yeah, so now you have a fan there too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Dancer, I already know, after talking with you today, I already know how important you have just become to me. Because I've been dropping hints about how, you know, we've been doing these Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series interviews, and we're doing these road tips. Oh, I need you to do a road tip on a Monday night soon. Just go ahead.
Okay.
And just be ready for this. Come up with one. And I'll tell you when you're coming up, and I'll tell everybody when they can tune in.
One of my best tips is don't stand up in a canoe.
You know, see, however you can make that work out, you know, to the benefit of you know, of what we're doing here, perfect. And you can explain it, and I'm good with that. But we keep talking, and I've dropped the hints.
Don't piss off the front of house, son.
Who might happen to be Dancer. All right, I understand.
Yeah, your solo will be so low, you won't be able to hear it.
I keep telling everybody about, you know, the, we have a show that's going to be wrapped around, you know, our, all of our guys and you know, and people that do, you know, behind, you know, behind the scenes.
I want a free for all. If you're going to do a group session,
And you know what? The fact that you used group session is important, because I do feel like that there will be some type of therapy involved at some point in this game.
I don't know how you'll go back to normal radio after that.
I don't think I will be able to. And, you know, and really, to be quite, I mean, and to be quite honest, I really think that I'm just going to be that person that pushes the button and starts with this one question. And then 2 hours later, I'm going to be like, okay, guys, so look, this is what I'm thinking.
Right. Normally, I've got the upper hand because I'm in control of the microphone, but I'll be left to the device of having to yell louder and tell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the important thing is that I think I'm going to need you. I think you like the way this is working out. I am going to need you for certain bits and pieces, because I've strategically in my head have started figuring out certain people that need to start showing up at the same time. You know what I mean? To have these conversations.
Right.
You know, and of course, it really depends on what the mode and what the attitude is about the, you know, about the actual, you know, conversation, and, you know, whether it is that you got to come in and be, you know, Dancer Grumpy Man, or whether you have to be Dancer, the one that's giving out the, you know, the rules and the right act, or whether you have to, you know.
Oh, I can be the nicest, sweetest guy that you'll ever meet, but I can be the biggest asshole you'll ever met in your life.
Well, see, I'm fortunate enough because I get the nice guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, people start out that way, and I stay that way with some people, but then if people show their ignorance or rear their ugly head of being stupid, then it somewhat changes.
You are.
That's
jaded.
Not going to happen here. You're a sweetheart. You're.
Aww, thank you.
What you're doing is old school, and I love it.
Thank you. And you know what? I love all of you guys. I love all the stories. I love all the stuff that I'm getting. And I love.
That's just one camp. I mean,
I know.
I've worked for 30 groups, and there's God. I mean, the people in Grand Rapids and Detroit are so tuned into my stories. It's like, oh, yeah. Dancer, tell us another story.
Yes. And that's the way it should be. But look, I mean, think about it, you know, man. Look at all the cool people and all the, you know, the different groups and stuff that you've worked with. You know what I mean? You've done.
I got lucky. I, you know, I'm very fortunate to have lived a dream that I never thought, you know, that when I was watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan that I would become one of those people, you know?
See, that's
it's something that's pretty amazing.
That's fantastic. Well, look, the guys, you know, several of them, especially John Cecilli, you know, because he sent love. He had to go work. He had to go to work because, you know, he's got to do this stuff for Cher. So he said, and it was so funny because he was saying bye, and he heard the part about you saying, you know, being able to go back on the road, would you? And you said yes. So he comes back, obviously, because he can't put this thing down, and was like, if he goes on the road, if he goes on this road, he was like, you know, he goes, if he ever does this again, he said I had better be on it. Okay. So, you know,
I feel the same way. I mean, the kindred spirits that we had accomplished on that tour and the two tours and the amount of time that I've been around the Alice Cooper camp and knowing Alice since 70s, you know, what better job can you have where you play golf in the morning with the boss and then go do sound for him later? I mean, it was phenomenal. Mike Godwin and I, they wanted us to reduce our per diem. I can't remember, but they wanted us to take less money to go to Japan with Alice. And we said, yeah, we'll do that, but throw in a couple of rounds of golf with the boss. So we played four rounds of golf in Japan with Alice, picked up every day by a limousine company van, and full boat. I mean, rounds of golf over there cost like $750.
Right.
We were comped for four rounds of golf. Walking up to a green and looking over and seeing Mount Fuji was pretty incredible, playing golf with the boss.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
In all this time, you know, you've had so much time in the business, Dancer, you know, and you've had fun. You've worked with some cool people. You have a brotherhood, you know, and sisterhood, you know, of team members and stuff, you know, doing stuff behind the scenes. You know, if you were to look at everything, is there something you haven't done yet that you go, hey, I got to do that? Is there something?
Work for the Rolling Stones. I always used to say, when the big joke at my house and the people that know me, did the Stones call? That, you know, that's
your line.
Line that I would say, you know, did the Stones call? I've done a couple of shows, don't get me wrong, as a stage hand, but I've never had the privilege of mixing sound for them. And that would be one thing that I would love to do. And another thing, and John Cizulli probably could make that happen, is mix sound for Sade.
See, I would not have known that about you. Wow.
Hey, you know, I listen to Lamb of God, The Antwoord. I listen to some pretty radical shit for a 66-year-old man. But the rock and roll has never left me and never will. And I've got a Detroit attitude that circumvents anything, you know.
Perfect.
We'll turn it into something if it's not something.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. All right.
So you get
one more chance here. I'm not going to ask some of the other things because your friends and your road crew, yeah, you people are really sick people. I just want you guys to know this. in the most fantastic and most heartwarming way possible.
It better not be a story about, you got to understand, people say to me, why don't you write a book? I could probably write a book. I'm in three books.
Why don't you write a book?
Be in more books in the future. But if I wrote all the shit that I have to say, there's one person that is still here, and this is where the respect factor comes in. It's my mother. I'm not going to write some of the shit and say some of the shit that I've done. I can talk about it amongst roadies and stagehands and rock musicians, and my mom probably wouldn't even be surprised. But out of respect for her, I'm not going to say certain things and not going to repeat certain things in public. Just like the groups that I've worked for. There's a couple of groups that I spent a long, long time with, but now I haven't talked to this one person since 1984, when I was the closest with him as I was with anybody in the industry.
Wow.
And I was his boy, and we did I was a producer and an associate producer. All the rough cuts and mixes for Double Eyed Gonzo were my mixes. I was Ted's right-hand man. It was Ted Nugent. But we had a falling out. I've never said one bad word about him. He's never said one bad word about me.
Wow.
We haven't spoken since 1984. People come up to me and say, how's your boy? They still associate me with Ted because of the great things we did in the 70s.
Wow.
But I'm not, that's just the way it goes, and that's the way it is. I'm not about to say anything bad about anybody. I can tell funny stories.
Yes.
But I'm not vindictive in any way.
No, and you're not supposed to be.
No, and you shouldn't be.
And you shouldn't be.
I mean, we were lucky to work for those groups and lucky to work for those people. We're lucky to still be doing this.
See? That's the biggest thing. All right, so your plan, you have to put together a tour or a show or something, and you have to put your band back together. You need to pull your boys. you have to pull all the roadies that you guys, you know, like the core people, and you guys need to go do a tour together. You just have to. Even if it's just for a short stint, you guys need to.
Well, I agree.
You need to pull something together where you guys get out there and actually, you know, show.
Well, a lot of these guys are still doing it. A lot of guys are doing things on a local level, but there's and once you've done it, here's my whole take on whether you're going to be in the industry and how long you're going to last.
Okay.
If you're an engineer or a lighting person and you come in, you've got four shots to make the show right. You've got four shows to make it right.
Okay.
So the first show would be a little rough. The next show should be a little bit better. The third show should be good, and the fourth show should be the way it sounds or looks. If you don't have it together in four shows, then you're gone, in my opinion. And that's the rule of thumb that we used back in the day with Tet. We had a lighting guy that could blackout at the end of a song, and we tried it again and tried it again, he might be gone that quick.
Wow.
But with roadies and techs and stagehands, if you're still doing it after 5 years, you're in. You're hooked. There's nothing else that you'll ever do in your life that will be as much fun or as important to you as that.
Wow.
So if you're still in it after 5 years, God have mercy on your soul. You're one of us.
You have come to the dark side.
Yeah, you're here. You're there. So you better be good, because you can't screw up these days and get away with it. Back in the 60s and the 70s, shit, you could screw up a lot and pass out or do drugs and screw up. But it's too important now. This is a business. It's a highly tuned business. And
yes.
If you're not ready for it, then stay home or sit on the porch with the other little dogs and watch the big dogs eat.
There it is. You said it. You've absolutely said it. I have, Dancer, I would talk to you for the rest of the show. I'm enjoying you way too much.
People that know me know that, don't get him going, because he probably could talk that much.
Well, no, you're coming back. No, we're fixing it up. No, you're coming back. We're going to make these things work. We're gonna work all of this out. I also know that you are in the middle of watching everybody else get stuff ready, since you were cool and you came.
Well, right now they're hanging drapes and mid-stage blackout and a few lights. The mid-stage black is about to go out, and they're going to rush it down and make sure there's no dirt on it. And then the front curtain's going to come in, and the teaser and everything, and then we'll be ready for the show. But it's Brian Reagan. He's a comedian, 2,400 seat, DeVos Hall, and it's tonight, and he's a funny guy.
Yeah, DeVos.
He's played here in Grand Rapids numerous times.
Yeah, DeVos Symphony Hall, two nights, 7 p.m.
Sold out.
Everybody is already sold out, so you're already going
to
have a house.
And everybody keeps walking by my window trying to distract me. Motor rep. They all think this is funny that I'm talking to you, and they can try to make faces at me and distract me.
Of course, they're trying to be somewhat distracting.
But I have my door locked, my window.
Of course. You. And I want to say, I was looking through the chat, and one of them got on there and in the chat, and they asked me if it was a problem that you weren't wearing pants.
Say what?
There's somebody that made a comment in the chat room. When I have to, let's see, like I gotta find it, because I mean, you just came by so quick. Somebody was saying that you weren't wearing pants.
Why I wasn't wearing pants?
Yeah, while you're sitting in the sound booth. Oh, that is
well,
it.
What's her name? Get her in here.
No, I think it's a gentleman. So, Ron.
Oh, no. Tell him he's not my type.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Ron Claus.
Ron, he's the promoter.
Yeah, he goes, yeah. We're,
asshole.
He was like, yeah, where's Dancer is broadcasting live via phone.
He's the one that's been standing in front of the window trying to see Ron Claus. He's local. He's the promoter. He's the promoter of the show tonight.
And he's like, is it creepy that he has his pants off? So it just, yeah, he said that in the chat room.
Tell him, yeah, that was a good one, Ronnie. I've known him since he was a little boy.
He's
grown in age, but he's still a little boy.
Well, then he'll always be a little boy. Batty, is sending a message. He's such a grouchy old F.
How can you tell? We're going to get into this group discussion. Somebody's going to have an interpreter just for Batty. What did he just say?
I just, yeah, right. He wanted to say he loves you.
I love him, too. I mean, he's a great guy. When he joined... when he joined the tour, the tour jacket that he got was from a guy that didn't make the tour, and it was me that gave him his tour jacket, and he still has it. He's proud of that. So calls me Dad.
He does call you Dad. In fact, that's what he keeps referring to you as. I'm going to let you get back to your show, sweetheart. You and I, we're going to, obviously, we got each other's number, and we're going to be texting and all that good stuff. And I know that there's some cool things that you're wanting to send this way, and there's some cool things I want to rip you and get you involved with. I'm going to let
Let's do this group growth. That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'll definitely let you know what date I want you to do a road tip, you know, on a Monday night with me during the metal show. And we'll go from that point. But, you know, in the meantime, honey, thank you for sharing your world and sharing a few moments with us here on Radio Memphis.
Well, a few snippets,
that's what it is.
I could tell stories for days, but then
everybody
would know everything. I don't want everybody to know everything.
They can't know everything, but they have to understand that you and I just really scratched the surface. We danced around a lot of stuff.
Now Ron just came out onto the stage and put his hands up, his thumbs up. He knows that we're talking about him.
Okay, well, hey to Ron, way to do your job. Go promo, go promo, go. Listen, you guys, you have a fantastic show tonight, honey, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, D, I love you.
I love you too, brother. We'll talk.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.